And I'm from Suffolk.
And I'm from Huddersfield.
And I'm from Grimsby.
The UK is probably the most
dialect-obsessed nation in the world.
With countless British accents.
Shaped by our history.
There are a few English-speaking nations.
With as many varieties of language.
In such a small space.
The way we talk
is influenced
by many factors.
Our friends.
Our family.
And our jobs.
It's one of the only parts of our identity we can change
without spending a penny.
It creates our first impression.
It can change when we're on the phone.
And it makes people say bath.
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 Bath wrong. Whether you're from Liverpool,
London, Leicester or Bristol.
We all have something unique to us.
The way we talk.
The way we talk.
The way we talk.
B, I'm from Lincoln.
I'm Sharon and I'm from Lincoln.
Mine's a bit weird.
it's not Lincoln. We're not from Lincoln. I'm originally from London and Cambridge, so I've got mixed. And she's been all over.
Really? Dawn Hinsley, and I was born in Salisbury. If I'm, obviously, because I'm from the West Country, when I've had a few drinks and I start to relax more, people start saying I go a lot more West Country. But sometimes I'll say things and it will be quite, there's just certain words, you know, and people pick up on it.
My name is Liam Fallon and I was originally born in South Africa, but I came over when I was about 6 years old. I've largely, I think, got an English accent, I think. But there's a kind of hint of South African, especially when I talk on the phone. You can hear me roll my R's and stuff like that.
My name is Nicholas and I've got a London accent. I like the countryside accents because my grandparents are from the countryside, like Dorset. So I really like those kind of accents. I really dislike the northern accents, actually. I'm a bit biased in that sense, and the northern, southern, there's that whole debate. But I just don't really like it that much. I prefer it in females, but I just don't like it as much in males.
There's no real accents that really grate on me. I'm not a big fan of the sort of Brummie accent, but yeah, it doesn't really bother me too much.
But I think they're all fascinating. I don't think we ought to lose them because I think, you know, they're just nice, Birmingham and the Scottish and the Welsh. I'd just love to hear them and I think it'd be a shame if we lost them all.
I can't stand the Scouse. I find the Newcastle accent really nice.
I think they're great, but I like the Irish accent.
Okay, well, that's very interesting because I've just got a girlfriend from Liverpool. She's actually born in Wigan. So she doesn't have the Scouse accent because I think that grates on me, the of this, like Scouse and Bacardi Breezer, like they do that a bit. But hers is without that and I actually like that a lot more.
Everybody has one. An accent, a certain dialect, phrases and words we commonly use that build up our own distinctive way of using the English language. Britain has a rich and varied range of different accents, from the long and drawn-out tones in the south to the shorter vowel sounds used in the north. You can be surrounded by the sounds of the traditional Liverpool tongue, travel 30 miles, and hear the completely different tones of the Manchester locals. But how did this happen? Paul Kurzweil and Dom Watt are professors in the Language and Linguistic Department at the University of York. Paul, who is a professor of sociolinguistics, currently teaches at the university and has previously conducted research into different social and cultural influences on dialects, including mobility and migration. Dom Watt, who recently published a book with Carmen Lamas titled Language and Identities, is a lecturer in forensic speech science. He also has lots of experience conducting research into speech, including the phonetics of different accents and language variation. We travelled to the University of York to talk to Dom and Paul about the history of regional accents here in Britain, as well as the media's influence on our speech patterns, and how an accent can affect our first impression of a person.
I'm Dominic Watt, and I grew up in Edinburgh. Scotland. The diversity of languages is quite incredible. You know, the way that we can encode ideas and information using sound, there's as many different ways of doing that as there are people almost, because, you know, at one level we have accents and dialects, and those are properties of groups of people, but we also have individual ways of doing things. So we have individual voices which are, you know, in lots of ways distinct from everybody else's voice. You can recognise an individual person by their voice.
Well, it goes back a very long way. It goes right back to the Anglo-Saxon settlement 1,500 years ago, where different Germanic tribes came over from the continent, Northern Europe, and settled in different parts of what's now England. So they didn't, it's thought they didn't have exactly the same language when they came over. And so that's the basis, in many cases, for some of the accent and dialect differences that exist now, although it's very hard to actually pinpoint anything as coming from that tribe or that or this other tribe.
Largely to do with the fact that the language has been spoken here for so long. It's like with, you know, genetic diversity or something like that. The longer people stay in one place, the longer there is time for populations to diversify and diverge from each other. And it's a bit like that with language. If people don't move around very much, you know, if they confine their lives to one valley, which was common enough in the past, you know, if people were born on a farm, grew up there, worked there, and you can imagine that very quickly little dissimilarities, little differences would start to become more entrenched and more characteristic of that part of the world. And eventually, it was literally the case in the past anyway, that different valleys, different nearby villages had their own characteristic ways of speaking.
Our accents are something that are two things. One is they are sort of hardwired, semi-hardwired into our brains from childhood. So however much I move around the English-speaking world, my accent isn't really going to change. I'm never going to be a northerner, even though I lived in the north of England for some years now. But our accents are also part of our identities. So northerners moving to the south of England really avoid change. Most of them try to avoid changing their regional accents. They try to avoid saying things like grass and path, because that is just one step too far. You know, they're just not very happy about sounding that southern that they say grass. They want to keep a northern identity.
There's a quote from George Bernard Shaw who said, you know, an Englishman can, no sooner does he open his mouth, it makes some other Englishman hate or despise him. That's more or less the gist of what he said. And, you know, the media has played on this a little bit with those old TV ads for Boddington's Bitter, where you had this incredibly kind of beautiful model, you know, long blonde hair, very long legs and everything. You're really glamorous. And in this swanky nightclub, you know, and you thought, when she starts talking, she's going to sound a particular way. She's going to have some very kind of husky, sophisticated sounding voice, right? But what they decided to do was make her sound really broad Mancunian, where the beer comes from. And, you know, that was the impact of that particular advertising campaign. It played on people's expectations of what somebody who looked like that would sound like. And, you know, it confounded those expectations. People don't expect very glamorous models to talk with Mancunian accents. But why is that? There's no reason why they shouldn't. But it somehow doesn't go with the image.
Once someone opens their mouth and speaks, most of us would admit to making a judgment about them, partially based on the way they talk. Although unfair, this can affect how we choose to speak ourselves when in different environments, such as the workplace or on the phone. Savile Row is one of the most exclusive streets in London, lined with tailors and jewellers selling products carrying hefty price tags. Can the way we talk ruin a sale or enhance a business?
Tom Bradbury, working in the front shop of the tailors on Savile Row. Definitely, everyone has different accents of where they're from, but you've got to speak politely to sell your product, because the customer's always going to want to spend money. You've got to speak a certain way if you want them to buy a product.
My name is Sophia and I work in retail. In this area, you need to be highly service orientated and polite and in control of the situation and take care of the customer's needs. Being South African, I can speak English, I think, without too much of a heavy accent, like, say, someone would from, like, Italy or France. So I believe it's good enough and people understand what I'm saying.
I'm sure it has some impact on how people judge you. In fact, it does have some effect on the branding of the shop or on people's feel when they come into the store. It's high-end.
My name is Yasmin and I'm a managing director of Aftershock Accessories. Doesn't. If anything, it really kind of gives a sympathetic way of dealing with the customer. They do quite like it.
My name is Karen and I'm a manager. It's not about the specific accent, it's just about the clarity and being clear to the customer so they understand what you're saying. I think it depends on the brand that you work for. I think it depends on the customer profile and their expectations. It depends what store they're shopping in. I think there are customers that would expect certain elements from people. It just depends on the brand and the customer profile.
Take a quick tube journey to the north of London and you get to Camden Market, a hub of different ethnicities, cultures and music.
People think I'm scum because I sound like an Essex, but it's not true. I'm very well spoken when I need to be, but generally I just talk how I talk normally. People don't always understand me because I talk very fast and I've got a bit of a strong accent.
I'm from Blackburn, Lancashire.
From Carlisle.
I'm from Dumfries in Scotland. My accent's not a Dumfries accent. It's kind of a mixture of a Glasgow accent because I couldn't say my O's, so I was like pound and round, but now it's pound and round. They couldn't understand what I was saying.
That was mostly my fault though, because I lived with him. I beat the accent out of him. I think the perception of you and where you're from is always a talking point, because I lived in Scotland for 11 years, so people can't really tell where my accent's from. I don't know, and it changes who I speak to as well. You kind of match it.
I'm from Port Sturt in Northern Ireland.
And I'm from Antrim.
In my job, when I'm working with the kids, I have to modify my accent because it's Ulster Scot, so they don't get the Scottish twang.
In my job, I have to speak slowly and clearly so people don't understand me.
It's certain words. And then after a while, it becomes habit.
I'm from India. It's different people. It's mostly people is Cockney and is Liverpool and Manchester. Scottish language is I can't understand sometimes.
Because I'm a professional magician, if I'm talking to someone from France, then I will obviously talk a little bit with a French-English accent. Or if I'm talking in any country and I realise where that person's from, then I'll adopt a little of the accent. And it makes them feel a little more relaxed and also easier to understand me.
Liverpudlians are known as thieves. So every time I hear someone scouse, I hold on to my wallet.
Discrimination, I wouldn't have thought so. If it's happened, I am not aware of it. Change my accents, yeah, quite often here in Camden when you're dealing with tourists, I sort of slow it down a bit or try and soften it a bit or just make words a bit easier.
Maybe some people, they behave like they didn't understand what I was saying and they didn't do the effort to understand me.
I'm trying to speak English with a good accent, but it's very difficult for me. I know that it's funny when I speak to people with a French accent like this. I can't speak like this too.
I'm trying to lose my Italian accent, but it sticks there.
And me, I change when I speak with girls. I speak like this because it's so cute.
Jamaican, sort of young kids maybe trying to put on a Jamaican West Indian accent.
Something to do with Jamaican, someone pretending to be Jamaican.
Is that like fake Jamaican?
In the southeast, there is a new phenomenon coming up, and this goes against this idea of estuary English, if you like, and that is the result of mass immigration, really, from the last 30 or 40 years, 50 years, to the London area, which is continuing apace, so that in some parts of the East End of London, roughly half the population was born overseas. And an even greater number of people trace their ancestry overseas to other countries. And so there seems to be the development of something we call, we linguists call, multicultural London English, which is something that young people throughout London, the East End in particular, of all ethnicities, share to some extent. There are slang terms and there are pronunciations which seem to be sort of like derived from the melting pot. The media tend to call it Jafakan.
Jafakan also has another name. They're two slightly different accents, but the one that's more dominant now in London is MLE, which is an acronym for Multicultural London English. And it's a kind of amalgamation of Cockney, some West African sounds, and some Asian sounds. And it's brilliant. I love it because it's so unique to this area at the moment. It's certainly starting to grow and spread, but I love the fact that it's a really dominant accent in London and that you can hear it when you're sat on the bus and have no idea of the ethnicity or the gender of the person who is speaking. And I just think that's cool.
Here in a quiet back street close to the bustling centre of Covent Garden, teacher turned voice coach Sarah Shepherd is seeing a client. Having started her career in film and television, Working on films such as Bridget Jones and Atonement, Sarah has utilised her ability to do a great impression and combined it with her love of talking to start her own business. Coaching everyone from actors to students, there are a huge variety of reasons why people choose to change the way they speak with her help.
I think there's a huge variety of reasons, actually. The most common one that I get is for personal and professional development. So most people come to me because they have a professional goal where they think they need to sound a little bit more clear with their speech and they need to be a bit more expressive. That seems to be the most common reason people come to me anyway. I mean, I have a couple of clients that have a Brummy accent, and there's been quite a few studies in the last decade that have suggested that that's the one that's sort of least desirable, and I do use that term in inverted commas because I do love it, but is least desirable in terms of professional development, again. I would say that British regional is probably my least common group that I work with. It's more likely to be people who are internationals. But if there was a trend within that, it would certainly be Brummy. Although I have had a couple of people who've got very strong Glaswegian who've come to me as well, which baffles me because I love any Scottish accent as well. And I did have to turn away a lady who had a really beautiful Scottish accent, but because she worked in a very big international company, she felt that her accent was difficult to be understood by the international people she was speaking to, and she wanted accent softening, but I actually declined to work with her because her accent was too nice. Most people want to be speaking roughly around the level I'm at. The way I would describe my accent is a sort of modern received pronunciation with a bit of estuary floating into it now after 13 years in London. So it's somewhere around my level, maybe a little bit posher than me. So going up into a more official received pronunciation accent. I think it depends on the age of the person. I do have some people who are maybe a little bit older, who are sort of 50 plus, and they just really want to sound like the Queen, or they want to sound like somebody super, super posh. And usually there's a good reason. It's not just that they're being pretentious, it's that they work in an environment with people who sound like that. So if you work with a bunch of old Etonians and you work in the city or something, you're probably more likely to want to sound like them. It's really scary for people when they change accent. And one of the biggest barriers to shifting accent is that it feels like you're no longer yourself. So there can be certain maybe rhythmic or muscular patterns that we have in our natural speech patterns, in our natural speaking voices, that when we try and shift those, we feel like we're changing our identity. And it can feel really, really strange. So I think it's part of our identity and it's absolutely fundamental to how we see our personality. With voice, it's such a crazy thing because you can never hide how you feel with your voice. If you're happy, it's going to come through in your voice. If you're depressed, it's going to come through in your voice. Because how you speak is directly related to how you move, and that's directly related to how you stand, and that's directly related to how you breathe, and how you breathe is directly related to how emotional you feel. It's all so tied in that it's just impossible to escape. The way we talk is years and years of muscular habit. It's years and years of cause and effect having an impact on our muscles and how we decide to express ourselves. I have clients, some of whom, for example, have had childhoods where they've been told that children should be seen and not heard. And so they've got really quiet voices and they've learnt to breathe accordingly. They've learnt to kind of clench and be tense in different places, and it has an impact on them for the rest of their lives. So changing that is really, really difficult. When you start talking, you don't think, I'm going to say the word hello, so I must go hello. You don't think about where you're putting your tongue and your lips and your teeth and how you make those words. So we literally have to work through very methodically. So if I was working with somebody who was, say, an international speaker and who was struggling to be understood, I would first listen to them speaking just normally. I would chat to them and not let them know that's what I was listening for. And I would pick out the biggest things that make them sound like they're not native speakers. And then we just start kind of peeling back the layers from there. So you work very technically and you look for shape, sound, tune, stress. You just work through those different features and try and make new habits. People often feel that if they're speaking quickly, that makes them sound more fluent, whereas the end result is somebody going, huh? And so I think that the result of changing it is confidence that what they think they are saying is exactly what's being received. You know, they've gone for jobs that they would never have considered before they started working with me because they now feel that they can get their point across. I think what we forget when we speak English as a first language, particularly, is just how much subtext comes into what we say in literally every utterance. And that's something that it just takes years and years and years to master. And if nobody explains to you how that subtext is formed, it's really difficult to just hear that and learn it on your own. So it's like taking a shortcut to being expressive. And I think that can have a massive impact on people.
Voice is incredibly important in all occupations. However, it's especially important when you work in a call centre. Talking to a wide range of broad accents from all over the UK can be a real test of a person's communication skills. But does having a strong regional accent seriously affect your chances when applying for a speech-focused job?
My name's Helen Fairhurst and I work as a team manager in customer service for Co-op Bank call centres in Manchester. I've worked in this call centre for about 6 months, but I've worked in call centres for the last 10 years. When you're talking over the phone, when you're speaking to people over the phone, it's not a face-to-face contact. You have to take into consideration a lot more things in terms of your tone and your pace can have much more of an impact. The speed in which you say things as well. So making sure that you're keeping a similar tone, matching what the other person on the phone is like as well, that's quite important. When we do focus on the calls and the types of training that we do, the introduction is the most important thing we do. And rather than concentrating on how things are said, it's how they come across. So whether they're friendly, whether they're positive, and whether they greet people nicely is more important than whether they're from Newcastle or whether they're from Manchester. I think a candidate can be affected by their accent if they were to have a really, really strong accent. But the most important thing is whether they can be understood or not. There's a guy on my team, he's from America, and I was listening to a call that he'd done recently, and the customer thought that he couldn't hear what she was saying, and she was saying to someone in the background, oh, he's from America, typical, and like was like, didn't really like the fact that he was American. Because it's a talking point, so people are interested to know what, you know, if he's from America, what he's doing there. But I also had on the same team another lad who was from Derby, and he had quite a strong Derby accent. But it's just quite fun because, you know, when you're talking about people saying different things, but in terms of it impacting his job, it didn't make any difference whatsoever. Often foreign accents can be quite difficult to understand, and really strong accents, but sometimes as well, you'll find that it's quite a talking point. So when you're trying to build rapport with someone on the phone, if I can recognise an accent in someone, I'll say, oh, are you from Manchester? And so often that's good for building rapport. Research that I've seen shows that call centres based in the north do better. Places like Newcastle, Liverpool and Manchester, quite renowned and quite popular voices to hear. When I'm interviewing, the first thing that I think about is this person able to be understood. So if you have a really, really strong accent, then it's going to limit your chances. So the most important thing is just that you can communicate well.
A survey conducted in 2005 released statistics which revealed what accents were perceived to be the least desirable when working in business. The Aziz Corporation, who conducted the research, specialise in developing the communication and leadership skills of senior executives all over the UK. This report suggested that 64% of businessmen regarded those with a Liverpudlian accent to be the least successful. This was followed closely by the Brummie accent, West Country, Cockney, and Geordie. All these accents are incredibly distinct, but do they grate on you? Meet Lee.
I class myself and also my city as we're individuals, we're on our own sort of thing, and that's reflected in the accents because there's nothing like a Liverpool accent within England. And the people of Liverpool and myself feel the same thing. We've got our own identity.
We played a short clip of Lee to a volunteer and asked him what he thought his occupation was, judging him only on the way he talks.
Everyone's kind of quick to jump to conclusions about, I don't know, their upbringing and social status based on anyone's voice. I'm not entirely sure. I'd say it seems like a more social kind of accent than anything else. So I always think as people who've got like a Liverpool or kind of more friendly accent like that, I always think they'll be in maybe like kind of a job or like in a shop or like kind of a call centre or something like that. Yeah, a more social kind of occupation.
I'm a part-time law student. I'm also a qualified embalmer over at Co-op Funeral Services. I'm looking to become a coroner which is what I want my law degree for. I've got to work as a solicitor, qualify for solicitor for 5 years. But I've been involved in the funeral business for 12 years now. So being a coroner is sort of the pinnacle of our sort of industry. I also work for a disaster management company as well. So we attend natural disasters and plane crashes and things like that to do mortuary operations. And that's about it, really. I've got a mortuary science degree from Chester University as well, all to lead me towards hopefully becoming a coroner one day.
No, it isn't what I expected. It has kind of shown my stereotypes. It's the first impact we make on people, and I suppose that is very important.
Lee is proud to be a successful Scouser, but do you think you would be as confident with such a strong accent? Speech workshops, elocution lessons, and communication classes are big business. This year, a national newspaper reported that Nancy Orkis Elvis, a 6-year-old model and actress, has up to £300 spent on her voice coaching lessons each term. Her parents spend large amounts to help her master different accents, such as Cockney and Geordie, to enhance her acting skills. Type voice coaching in the UK into a search engine, and you'll get nearly 6,000 hits. So why is it so popular? Sarah Marley, a volunteer who was born in Middlesbrough but grew up in London, arranged to meet up with Laura Field. Laura, who set up her business Spoken Word Studio in Nottingham 7 years ago, aims to get clients speaking more clearly and expressively. The former drama teacher realised there was a huge need to teach students how to develop the way they spoke, learning to project their voices enough to be heard effectively during performances. Laura has adapted her training as a drama teacher to help coach business groups, students and actors to develop the clarity of their speech. Sarah went to see Laura to have her very first elocution lesson.
Hello,
hi.
Sarah.
Nice to meet you.
Come on in. Now, you said that you'd like to improve your spoken English and your spoken communication skills. What's prompted this?
I think I use a lot of slang terminologies.
What I heard when you were speaking to me was that you often leave off consonants when you speak, and pronouncing consonants within words immediately creates a crisper, more defined sound. So, tell me what you read.
I'm not much of a reader, really. Magazines once in a while.
Right.
Read books, yeah.
Read. Because that's where vocabulary, that expressions, emotions, situations comes from. That's how we build a bank of vocabulary. In a moment, we're going to do an open mouth and then we're going to let a sigh out. So we're going to go,
ah, ah.
Very good. And you know, when we let that big breath out, all sound is carried on the out-breath. We can only speak when we breathe out. So unless we're practiced at releasing breath with a lovely strong column of air that pushes the voice out, we can't project our voices and we can't speak clearly. We're going to just work on these vowel sounds. Youth training tends to be about taking speech and drama exams. Then for adults, really having the confidence to speak clearly and speak expressively seems to be the main area that people want help with. Business groups really want to train employees to be able to interact with clients in a clear, constructive, positive way and be understood. Yay. Start breathing out. Hey.
Hey.
Good, really good. Well, you can imagine seeing a very attractive person in front of you, maybe at the desk of a business you walk into, and then they open their mouths and you can't understand what they're saying. You have to say, excuse me, can you speak up? Sorry, could you say that again? Or their manner of speaking is rather off-putting and doesn't make you feel relaxed and comfortable. They've just lost any advantage they have.
Do it again.
Lovely. Can you feel the difference?
Yeah.
Quite a few clients come to me with heavy accents, and that can be because they've grown up in another country, they speak their, it's not their native language, English, or because they speak with a very heavy regional accent. These are things that can be worked on. You may need to have several sessions to start to change inflection, where stress is put, intonation, and to adjust vowel sounds, adjust consonants. Lovely. And now we'll do it with I. Okay, eyes, really open your eyes. Because once you start to focus on speaking, you have to focus on listening to what is said as well, and to hearing sound and spoken language in a different way. It makes you more receptive to what somebody else is saying and how they're saying it. So your own awareness of your own voice helps you listen to others. This increased awareness is very, very helpful in many situations. Sarah, would you like to just practice that line again? And then that will be the final exercise of the day, and then you can take it home and practice it.
A single solid silver sifter sifts sifted sugar.
Apart from sifts, you had got everything else right, and your mouth is really opening a lot more.
It's been great help today. Thanks very much, and I'll practice some more.
Thank you. I think you will. You've been a really willing student. Thank you so much for cooperating and being prepared to do such uncomfortable things initially. I think it's paid off.
The way we talk clearly has a direct link with how we are received by others. Liz Brewer, best-selling author and teacher of social behaviour and etiquette, in the hit TV series Ladette to Lady, explains why clear communication is so important.
The way you speak is incredibly important, because if you're not understood and people don't understand you, you are at a disadvantage. I have no problem whatsoever with regional accents. In fact, I love regional accents. But the people have to learn to be able to articulate their words in order to be understood. Often with the girls I was teaching, their accents were so heavy, I couldn't understand a word they said. So it puts you at a disadvantage if you're going for a job or you're trying to sell something, and most things in life are to do with selling. If you can't articulate and explain something clearly, then the other person doesn't listen, loses interest, and you get nowhere. A lot of people get a big surprise when they listen to their own voice recorded. Listen to it, and then there are these various little rhymes, which you say, the rain in Spain. Believe it or not, they really do help. And if you speak out loud and repeat them out loud, does help. But it's to do with articulating your words. So when you do repeat a sentence, such as how now brown cow, what it does is it makes you say the words in a way where the other person eventually will be able to hear them very clearly. And you also get used to hearing your voice, because when you're saying those, you're supposed to be listening to your voice. And you're doing it in order to, as it were, form the words correctly. Your identity is not to do with the way you speak. It is to do with the way you behave. As I say, the way you speak is important, in as much as if you can't be understood, then you're going to be at a disadvantage. When somebody's, if you're going for a job and somebody's interviewing you, when they ask you a question, if you can't make a sentence to answer, or in fact answer in such a way that makes sense and is understood, you're not going to get the job. And that is quite important. So presentation is important, and the way you present yourself is part of your identity.
Whether you love them or hate them, it's clear that regional accents in the UK reflect our rich history. As transport links have become more advanced and accessible, dialects have adapted and are continuing to do so.
Regional accents, I guess what you're going to see is that the main regional accents will persist, at least for a few generations more. It's not a slippery slope towards uniformity, because in the cities you're seeing new things happening. You're seeing the emergence, for example, of multicultural London English, this real mix-up of features of Anglo-English, as it's called, traditional London working-class English mixed in with Asian features and Afro-Caribbean features. I mean, think about the number of kids who grow up in London whose first language at home is not English. It's a really large proportion. It's not like 40%. And so they're bringing with them their different forms of, you know, their first language, but also the accented English that they might hear around them in their communities. All thrown together, and what you get out is this kind of real amalgamation of features from Punjabi and Somali and Jamaican Creole and you name it, it's all in there. And it's a really fascinating process to watch happening. It's language changed before your very eyes. A lot of people don't like it. They say this is, you know, this is destroying the purity of English. Like, you know, the language has never stood still. It wouldn't be like it is today had it not been for immigration from here, there and everywhere and borrowing words from languages around the world.
The Way We Talk was produced by Philippa Waterhouse-Biggins and Sarah Marley and was narrated by Sue Toogood. For photos, extra audio and more information about The Way We Talk, visit our blog, thewaywetalk.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk.